Hello, this is Effie Pilarinu, and I have the pleasure today to have Greg Davis from London, from Oxford Risk. He's the head of behavioral science there, and I'd like to welcome him. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Effie. Thanks for having me.
And before we dive into what Oxford Risk is all about, I would like to say that the space of risk profiling, customer profiling, decision making in financial services is a huge area. We are past the first phase where we had the basic tools and we only cared about just onboarding clients in 2 minutes and so on. And now I think we are really at the stage where we need to look at who's doing serious work and different than the usual onboarding tools that are just digitizing a questionnaire, so to speak. So, Greg, before we go into this deep dive, tell us just a little bit about Oxford Risk. How many years has it been around? What are the target clients and kind of the value proposition at the 35,000 feet level, I would say?
Yes, with pleasure. So Oxford Risk is a bit like a 15-year-old startup in the sense that the company was actually started as a spin-out of Oxford University 15 years ago. It was founded by some very senior behavioral science and decision science academics in Oxford, and it spent the first half of its life really being a vehicle for their consulting activities, bringing all of their expertise to bear on a range of problems. About 10 years ago, Oxford Risk started focusing specifically on understanding financial decision making and understanding financial personality and building client profiling tools to help particularly wealth managers and financial advisors to understand their clients. And the latest manifestation is in the last 2 years, I have joined. And we have a new CEO, my business partner, Marcus Quirin. And we are now re-extending the boundaries of the business. So instead of just focusing on client profiling, what we are looking to do is to bring applied behavioral finance into building a raft of software-based solutions to help people make better financial decisions. We still have a heavy focus on wealth management and on financial advice and on suitability and on client profiling. But we're also doing a lot of work more broadly in retail banking, looking at the concept of financial well-being more generally. How do you take data? How do you take design? How do you take digital solutions and bring these things together with behavioral science at the heart of them in order to help people make better decisions? And by better, I very much do not mean just how do we give them the right technical answer? How do we tell them what the right financial thing to do is? Because a good financial decision is not always the technically risk return optimized decision. A good decision is one that people can be comfortable with. And we aspire to serve not just people's financial needs, but their emotional needs. Because if we can serve both of those, we can help people to make better decisions and to stick with those decisions and, as a result, get to better realized outcomes at the end.
So I mean, this obviously has to have the word holistic in a broader sense than just money,
yes.
Right? And I mean, this seems to me huge. And it's not a small task to look at, and it goes well beyond the scope of what banks are doing right now, correct?
That's true. I mean, there are some small forays into this direction. Behavioral finance has becoming an ever more an ever bigger buzzword over the last 15 years, really, but we are still scratching at the surface of it. You're absolutely right. You know, when I think about what it is that makes people carry out a good decision, and let me just take an example from wealth and investment management. We might ascertain someone's financial needs holistically. In other words, I look at their whole financial life and their future goals, etc. And as an industry, what we're quite good at doing then is going, I've crunched all the numbers. Here is the right thing for you to do. What the industry is exceptionally bad at doing is saying, actually, in almost every single case, the right thing to do is also an uncomfortable thing for people to do. It is uncomfortable for almost everyone to take money from somewhere safe, cash, and put it somewhere risky, investments. And so while that might be the right thing for them to do for their long-term needs, unless we start to think about their emotional needs, about their need for comfort with their decision-making, we're going to find that people start making mistakes. They're going to start succumbing to their biases. They're going to be over-trading, buying high, selling low, all the stuff that we know is the wrong thing to do. That all comes from the fact that people want to feel comfortable in the moment. And in the moment, we get led by our gut, we get led by our intuition. What we're trying to do is to realize that merely following the standard procedure of financial services, which is, here, we've solved this complex problem for you, and here's an answer, is actually not solving the real problem for people. The real problem for people is, how do you get them comfortably towards that complex answer over time in a way that they can stick to and feel comfortable with?
Understood, understood. And obviously this has to take into account uncertainty in their behavioral profile, which obviously is dynamic and changes in different circumstances.
Absolutely. Well, there are some things that are less dynamic. So we have a series of tools which enable, these are psychometric tools that enable us to profile investors on their, what we might think of as their financial personality. Now, classical finance theory has one and only one space for your personality. It says, tell me your long-term risk tolerance and I will pick off the right points on the efficient frontier for you. And that is the only place in the whole of finance theory where who you are matters. The rest is all about optimizing investment choice and what I know about the world out there. The problem with that is that there are all sorts of aspects of you, who you are, that go, well, you've given me that right answer, but I feel uncomfortable because it feels unfamiliar, or I feel uncomfortable because it's happening too fast and I'm not ready yet, I don't have the knowledge and experience, or I feel uncomfortable because people around me are not doing that. And so the question we need to ask is, how do we help people to get the emotional comfort they need in a cheap, planned, and efficient way, rather than saying, here is the right answer for you, and then you watch people desperately clawing for this comfort, particularly when market volatility spikes or political events start to come in, you'll find that people start reaching for very expensive comfort. They will sell at the bottom of the market because it's too uncomfortable to hold on to their assets. All of these things can be addressed. And the fundamental point that we have is that we can help people to get closer to a good financial solution whilst simultaneously also being more comfortable with that. Because we have profiled their personality, we know what things make you uniquely comfortable or uncomfortable, and we can help you to do that.
But Greg, is this a tool for individuals or is that the B2B level?
We apply it at a B2B at the moment.
Okay.
So we provide, this profiling tool is one of many things that we provide, for example, to wealth managers. We have the ability with this psychometric tool, which is delivered technologically through API. We can plug it into other large companies' front-end solutions. But we can measure up to 10 different dimensions of financial personality. And what we are doing is helping our clients, the wealth managers, the financial advisors, the retail banks, we're helping them to understand their end clients in a much richer, deeper, and more valuable way. And that can help you. Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to ask that kind of, they use your tool and produce all sorts of metrics. That's kind of like a metadata that they can also use in all sorts of ways to serve their clients, right?
Oh, absolutely. So various aspects of your personality will change the right level of risk for you to be taking at this point in your life. They might change the selection of products that is suitable for you or that is most appropriate for you. So there already you can use to go, here's how we fine-tune your level of risk to meet the needs of your personality. Here's how we fine-tune the actual investment and product selection we give you. But perhaps more importantly, I can start to deeply personalize the communication that I have with all of my end clients as a bank, as a wealth manager, that is in a way that is attuned to who they are. So as markets go up or down, as I observe people's portfolios going up or down, as I observe their behavior, maybe they've made money, lost money, salary increase, etc., I can start to provide individually tailored nudges and prompts and education and communication that is directly connected to a robust measure of who they are and what communication style and what messages are likely to make them more comfortable.
More comfortable, I understand. Can you share with us any of your clients or kind of clients or names that you're collaborating with or that are using in some way your tools?
Yes, so we are at the moment, the bulk of our clients are in the UK. Mm-hmm. We serve at sort of the top level, big universal banks that have wealth management or financial advisory arms. Mm-hmm. And so we provide risk profiling software to Standard Life. We provide it to HSBC. We also serve a number of pure play wealth managers, larger end wealth managers, so Brewin Dolphin, Rathbones. And then down at the smaller end, we have tools that we can provide off the shelf either through technology platforms or using our own standalone tool to serve the broader IFA market and smaller wealth management or advisory firms as well. And so there's a whole range. We do everything from big to small. These tools are applicable from super high net wealth, all the way down to actually many of them we're starting to deploy in a much more of a retail banking and a financial well-being context. So looking more at savings behavior and debt management and insurance rather than investment advice. And we apply them across the spectrum from tools to assist the human advisor. So how do we help the human become more effectively the best human they can be, all the way down to providing them for pure digital offerings. So, for example, we provide the risk profiling for Nutmeg, which is a robo-advisor here in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. I was going to ask you if there's any robo-advisor of any sort that you work with, because that would make a lot of sense, obviously.
Yeah, and we like that because our tools are all designed to digitize aspects of behavioral finance and human behavior. So they are very empirically data-led. You can think of them as large sets of triggers. If this happens to this customer and the customer happens to have a score of this, then do this. So there's a big sort of series of if-then statements that allow you to personalize based on a rich profile. So we like the digital stuff. At the same time, our aspiration is not to replace advisors or replace the human as behavioral people.
Empower them. You're really empowering them with a data-driven but very human-centered solution.
Yes, we're most interested at that interface between the system and the human. So we want to empower them. That's a good word. We want to enhance them. Mm-hmm. I often talk about what we're really doing is we are building decision prosthetics. We are building tools to enable the human to be more consistent, less error-prone, more insightful, more efficient, and more effective. And that for our clients obviously helps to reduce risk. It helps to make the humans, who are quite expensive often, makes them more efficient. And the fact is, if we look at computers and humans, there is stuff that computers do better than humans, but there is still stuff that humans do better than computers. And what we want to do is to build things where the two can interface together, so that the sum is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
You're really standing in a great position in this convergence that is happening around us between humans and technology, and you have a valuable proposition to offer that can help us all stand and benefit from both, from being human and from using technology, right?
I certainly hope so. The interesting thing to me is I've often said over the years that behavioral finance on its own is completely useless. It's a series of nice ideas, but it's not until we start to integrate it with computers, technology, systems, data analytics, design. It's only when the behavioral ideas connect with these other things that it really starts to become powerful. And the world we're in right now is the one where advances in, big data or fast data, or it could even be small or medium-sized data, to be quite honest, advances in that, advances in machine learning, advances in the digital's ability to put in front of people at each moment a configuration of a decision that is appropriate to who they are and their current circumstances. So it can be dynamically responsive. And to be honest, advances in human design, human-centered design, the more arty side of this is making sure that that interface isn't just about plowing through data, but it's about the design of how you put that choice in front of someone in a way that makes their life easier, or it makes it easier for them to get to a good decision rather than what most people do when they're faced with a complex decision is they shut down, they step away from it, they postpone it until next year.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Greg, there's a lot to talk about, but in the interest of time, I would like to maybe ask you to share with us some of the distinctions and the terminology that I see you use. That's, of course, the basis of the algorithms and the framework that you've developed. So we can start understanding that, risk profiling and what's your risk tolerance is not an easy thing, and it's not the only dimension and KPI that we need to talk about. I wanted to ask you, what do you define as risk capacity, which is different than the risk tolerance? Can you tell us in a few sentences?
I could try. I mean, I would say first that I think this, you've put your finger on a real problem in wealth management, where the same terms are used very differently by different people. And so there's very little agreement around this. So if I could start with risk tolerance. By risk tolerance, I mean something very specific. I mean someone's long-term cool, calm, and collected willingness to trade off risk in return of an outcome in the future. Okay. That is very different in most cases to how I feel about risk this morning. And the problem with a lot of risk profiling tools out there is that they are more measures of how you feel this morning than they are measures of what is appropriate for you to do for your long-term trade-offs. And how you feel about risk this morning is a very, very poor basis on which to build someone a long-term portfolio. It's extreme. It's all over the place. It's unstable. When times are good and spring is here and the newspapers are full of good news stories, people, you'll measure something and you'll measure someone's risk tolerance as being high, and it won't be. It'll just be that today I feel like I'm on a high. And if we start building that into portfolios, we have a real problem. But let's imagine we've measured risk tolerance well. We have a psychometric approach that uses just 8 questions to get to an empirically valid measure of your long-term willingness to trade off risk and return. The risk capacity comes in because that cannot be the whole answer. You can imagine someone who is in their early 30s. They're well-educated, they've landed a good job, they're earning a good salary, and they have 35 years of accumulation of saving ahead of them. But this person, personality-wise, just happens to be very low risk tolerance. To argue that because they are low risk tolerance, that that person should be stuck in an 80% bond portfolio for the next 35 years is a completely incoherent thing to argue. So we cannot base the right answer just on risk tolerance. We also have to ask the question, what is your capacity to take risk? What is your ability to take risk? And here the tools that we are building is saying, that is about your circumstances, your plans, your spending plans, your future goals. And we have a tool that effectively is a distillation of someone's entire current balance sheet, their investable assets, their non-investable assets, their liabilities and mortgages, and their future potential for earning and for spending, and distills all of that down, all of those data down into a single number that provides for wealth managers the answer they really need, which is, what is the right level of risk for this person to take now for the next 6 months, 12 months, based on who they are, their financial personality, and based on where they are in their life now? And how do we provide a full audit trail justification for why that is the right answer, both in order to make them comfortable with it and to make the regulators comfortable with it? And how do we respond dynamically to what we observe happening to that person's portfolio and circumstances over time? So what you have there is a very holistic view that encompasses their personality, it encompasses the totality of their circumstances, including their aspirations for the future, and in a very quantitative way processes all those data to provide a complete audit trail and justification for what is the right level of risk for this person to take in a dynamic sense.
That's great, Greg. I think, you know, in the short time that you were able to give us some of the enriching elements that you're trying to bring to the forefront. Thank you very, very much for being with us. And
it's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.